Okay, Erev Tov to everybody. Hope everybody is well.
Eric Tuff.
Erev Tov. Okay, tonight is May 15th, Wednesday, May 15th. We have Shir tonight. Next week, May 22nd, then May 29th, and then the final Shi'ur before Shavuot will be June, whatever it is, the 6th. And then the next week is already Shavuot. So Emir Tzashem will be able to finish the book of Melachim Abet during the course of our time together. So let's go back and start where we were last week. Let me put my sorry, I had brought up my text. So let me get my text again and bring it up. Let me take this down for a second. Let me get my text up here. Okay. Text. Get more. Share. Okay. Sorry, let me just get myself going here. Yeah, okay. So I'm sharing the text. Last week, in the second half of the shiur, we discussed the reign of Menashe, who reigned for a very long time. Ben 12 shana Menashe ben Molcho v'chamishim v'chamesh shana malach b'Yushalayim. He was king for 55 years, a very, very stable king. We don't hear about any wars. We don't hear about any disruptions. And I think I mentioned, he reverses the policies of his father, Chizkiyahu. And probably that means that he became a very much more pro-Assyrian, which probably led to the stability because he was a good vassal of the Assyrian state. He did not make rebellion. He did not participate in rebellion against the state, the Assyrian state. He encouraged trade and interaction, and that's probably why you have so much of the Avodah Zarah returning into Eretz Yisrael. He builds altars, all these different Avodah Zarah, which were very much reflective of the Assyrian culture. And he brings this all in. And again, in the latter half of the Shir, we talked about the fact that his end in the Book of Kings is reflected very negatively. He's one of the main reasons why there would be the ultimate destruction and the galut because of what he did. And he's going to bring, God says he's going to bring the destruction of Shomron. We're going to destroy, etc., etc. Yan asher asu Mitzrayim until now. So we saw all that. And I mentioned in the end that the pasuk also tells us v'gam dam naki shafach Menashe, and ostensibly that refers to political opponents, religious ideological opponents. That's dam naki. That's the way Jeremiah describes himself later on when he opposed the policies of the ruling power. That's the way the Zechariah HaNavi is described when he was killed. Zechariah HaKohen, Zechariah the Kohen, who was killed in the Beit HaMikdash. So there was clearly a lot of, there was opposition. There were people who probably were holdovers from the time of Chizkiyahu, from his father, who did not agree with the sharp shift in the foreign policy, domestic policy, religious policy, and probably created an opposition. And these people were the ones who were killed And Menashe is buried, and his son takes over. And again, you see the intrigue that while Amon, the son, wants to continue the path of his father, the Avdei Amon conspire against him and kill him. Vayach am ha'aretz et kol ha'koshrim al melech Amon, v'yamlichu am ha'aretz et Yoshiyahu beno tachtav. They come and they appoint Yoshiyahu. Now, why did they appoint Yoshiyahu? The Bible doesn't say. Did they think Yoshiyahu was going to be able to be controlled by them? Because if we start tonight's perek, and that's where we're starting, the text tells us that Ben Shmona Shana Yoshiyahu b'molcho. So he was a young man. He was 8 years old, which means that his guardians, his advisors, were the one who were the ones who had an impact on him. So this is a very interesting fact. And of course, it raises the question of who ultimately would be the mashpia, those who would have the greatest influence on Yoshiyahu. Would it be the advisors who followed Menashe? Would it be others? Who were these Am Haaretz? Again, there's a lot of vagueness here. If we look in the book of Divrei Hayamim, the Bible throws in a little more information, right? Because here it says Ben Shmona Shana Yoshiyahu b'Molcho. He was 8 years old, and then we skip already to Shmo Bish Vayhi b'Shmona Esrei Shana LaMelech Yoshiyahu, which means when he's already. So when he if he was eight, and then in his when he was king for in his 18th year, then we already have a new story. So that's when he was 26. He was already a grown-up man. And we don't have too much here, except that Vayas HaYashar b'nei Hashem. He did positively in the eyes of God. If we look in the book of Divrei Hayamim, gives us a little bit more information. We look in Divrei Hayamim Bet, Perek, Lamed, Dalet. Ben Shmona Shanim Yoshiyahu b'Malchoh Shloshim Ve'Echad Shana Melech Yerushalayim, Vayasa Yashar B'nei Hashem, Vayelech B'Darkei David Aviv V'Lo Sar Yamin U'Smol, U'Bishmona Shanim L'Molchoh V'Hu Odenu Na'ar Hechel Lidrosh Leilohei David Aviv. So when he was 16, he started to seek out Lidrosh Leilohei David. Now the term Lidrosh here doesn't mean giving drushes. As we know, the term Lidrosh means to seek out, usually the Navi, the oracle. The first time that appears in the Bible is by Rivka. Vatelech Lidrosh et Hashem. She goes to find out what is going on with her situation. Moses describes one of his major roles to Yitro as Ki avo elai ha'am lidrosh Elokim. They come to seek my advice, to seek my guidance. Shmuel, Shaul, we just meet Shaul and he's looking for the atonot. He's looking for the donkeys. So he seeks out God. So lidrosh means to seek out an answer. Very often, that's the term. When Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know what happened to the korban, so he says, "V'hinei dorash dorash." It was sought out. It was investigated. So they go to talk to Elokei David Aviv. Who exactly are they talking to is not clear. Who exactly is he talking to? But tantalizingly, we find out if we. I'm sorry. If we go back, and we find out a little again, a interesting. Little tidbit of history as we start to look. As I said, Yeshayahu is long dead. If Menashe, again, according to the rabbinic tradition, Menashe killed Yeshayahu. Again, there's no indication of the text that that happened, but certainly Menashe was around a long time, 55 years. There's no indication that Yeshayahu prophesied during the time of Menashe. In the superscription to Yeshayahu, so it says, Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amoz, Hashem Malach, bimei Uzziyahu, Yotam, Achaz, Chizkiyahu. It doesn't say anything about him prophesying during the time of Menashe, which is one of the reasons why it makes sense that he was somehow off the stage by the time, in Menashe's time. So again, the rabbis associated that with whatchamacallit, with him being killed by Menashe. But again, if we go to the book of Yirmiyahu, so it's interesting, the text tells us about the birth. Divrei Yirmiyahu ben Chilkiyahu mina koanim Esrei Shana Le Molcho. So God appeared to Yirmiyahu in the 13th year of Yoshiyahu's reign. And he continued to prophesy in the time of Yehoyakim ben Yoshiyahu, Atom Ashtei Esrei Shana, Litzidkiyahu ben Yoshio Melch Yuda ad Glot Yerushalayim b'Chodesh HaChamishi, until the exile of the Jews. So, very tantalizingly, it's a very interesting kind of a fact. I'm sorry, not I wanted to go back to Malachim, to Divrei Hayamim, excuse me. So in Divrei Hayamim, we're told that that Yoshiyahu starts to, he was appointed king in his 8th year. In his 12th year, he starts to lidrosh lelokei David Aviv. Now, again, if we fudge the numbers a little bit, 12th year, 13th year, was Yirmiyahu already the person who Yoshiyahu started to turn to at the beginning of his inauguration as a prophet? Was Yirmiyahu already known as someone of stature, and then God gave him a mission? Again, I don't know exactly, but again, it's very tantalizing that it's around the same time these people, Yirmiyahu and Yoshiyahu, are, so to speak, starting their career. And it's not by chance that they work together later on. They kind of work hand in glove, and Chazal really, really develop in many midrashim this kind of dynamic duo image of Yirmiyahu and Yoshiyahu together trying to bring back the lost tribes, etc., etc. So you have this language here. Shmona shanim David. When he's already 20, he starts to get rid of all of the avodah zara. He gets rid of the avodah zara. He destroyed everything, etc., etc. And then the text takes us a step further. It makes it very clear that he's not just interested in Judah and Jerusalem, Vayitaheret Yudah, Ube'arei Menasheh, Ve'efraim Ve'shimon Ve'ad Naphtali, Ve'charvoteim Saviv. He went all the way up north, meaning there are clearly Jews who are still left up north that he wants to, in a certain sense, bring into the fold and make them part of the Judean kingdom. Again, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, there's no doubt that with the exile of the 10 tribes, there was a large group that went into exile in Assyria and was lost forever. There's a large group that probably went down to Jerusalem and started to make their life in Jerusalem already. And that is indicated by the archaeological evidence that during this period, after in 705 or whatever, or 720, whenever Shomron was destroyed, Jerusalem was mitrachev. It expanded, and now we are, 55 years later. This is around 640, 642 BCE. During this period of time, vayinatzeitz et hamizbachot v'tasherim v'apsilim kitat l'hadeg, etc., etc. And then in the 18th year, excuse me, ubishnat shmonah esrei mechol l'taher ha'aretz v'abayit shalach, etc., etc., l'chazek et beit Hashem elokav. So you have here this picture of a developing character who's able to do this. I want to add, before we continue, before we go back, I want to add another important point historically, which we know from the Assyrian and other annals of the time. As I said, during most of the latter part of the 8th century BC, and the majority, two-thirds, one could say two-thirds of the, or at least half of the 7th century, let's say from from 700 to around 645, Assyria was dominant. Assyria was on the rise. Assyria was the superpower, unmatched, unchallenged. And as I mentioned, Israel was very much a vassal. During the next few decades, Assyria begins a process of decay to the point where, they will eventually be their empire shrinks. There's a lot of wars, especially starting in 627, which again is very striking, is the probably the 13th year of Yoshiyahu is around the time that there are is the rise of I think his name is Ashurnapal, and he is the king of Assyria who kind of oversees the downfall of much of Assyria. And in 612, I think Nineveh is captured, and the Battle of Carchemish in 605, eventually, which destroys, much of the Assyrian kingdom. So these are the decades starting in the 630, 620. These are the decades that Assyria is on the way down, which also allows for the renaissance of the period of Yoshiyahu. Because Assyria is on the way down, Israel, Judah can start to distance itself more from Assyria, from its culture, from its influence. And it is a perfect moment in time in history that Yoshiyahu comes in. Yoshiyahu and Yirmiyahu, the last great hope of resetting the clock and somehow stopping the Churban, or at least mitigating. Maybe there would be a Churban, but it would be much, maybe there wouldn't be an exile. Maybe it would be an exile, but there wouldn't be a Churban. Maybe things would have gone a little differently. This is the period of time. These are the key decades. Assyria is on the way down, and Yehuda has a good king. It has a good Navi, Yirmiyahu, and Sephaniah, and other contemporary prophets who can give guidance. And so during that first period of time was a tremendous opportunity, gathering together the last remnants of the northern tribes, bringing together, cleaning out the Avodah Zarah, cleaning out the Beit HaMikdash. This is all here by Yoshiyahu. And so when we come back to Malachim with this background, this is a very potentially hopeful, potentially, great opportunity that Israel, so to speak, has this last great opportunity. And now the Bible describes, again, focusing on the Beis HaMikdash, Vayihi, and therefore it skips maybe the other things that are mentioned explicitly in Divrei HaYamim, while Divrei HaYamim is going to focus on the greatness of Yoshiyahu as the king. Vayihi b'shmona esrei shana la'melach Yoshiyahu, shalach ha'melach et Shafan ben Atzalyahu ben Meshulam ha'sofer beit Adonai le'mor. So he sends Shafan to go find Aleil Chilkiyahu HaKohen HaGadol v'yateim et ha'kesef ha'muvah beit Hashem asher asu shomer asaf meit ha'am v'yitnu ha'idei osei ha'melacha mufkadim beit Hashem v'yitnu otah l'osei ha'melacha. Go and they should fix up the Beit HaMikdash l'chazek berek ha'bayit, to support the renewal, the construction, the maintenance of the Beit HaMikdash. L'charashim v'labonim v'lagodrim, to all the various artisans, those who are harashim, those who are engravers, those who build, those who make fences, v'liknot etzim v'avnei machtzev l'chazek et habayit, to once again strengthen the house. Again, there may be a little hint here. We're skipping over Menashe and going back to Chizkiyahu, the one who strengthened the relationship to God and strengthened and cleaned out the Beit HaMikdash. We're now going to have a redux of Chizkiyahu, l'chazek bedek habayit. And this is what they should do. Ach lo yichashev itam, akesef hanitan yadam ki be'emunahim osim. Don't take a, you don't have to count because these are honest people. We now have the second part, which is a very famous story, which has tremendous echoes till today in both traditional sources and in the Bible critics. Vayomer Chilkiyahu HaKohen HaGadol al Shafan HaSofer, Sefer HaTorah Matzati beBeit Hashem. I discovered a Sefer Torah. Vayitein Chilkiyahu et haSefer el Shafan vayikra ehu. Vayavo Shafan haSofer el Melech vayashev et haMelech davar. Vayomer hitichu avadecha et haKesef hanimtza baBayit. They did all this work, but also he gave me a book. Vayikra ehu Shafan etznei haMelech. Vayhi kishmo haMelech et divrei Sefer haTorah vayikra et bgadav, etc. So you have here this this book that they read. What is this book that they found? There are many interpretations that are floating around. One interpretation is straight up, they found a Sefer Torah. What does it mean they found a Sefer Torah? They didn't have any Sifrei Torah. So one way to take it is to read it as, yeah, in Achanami, during the period of Menashe of 55 years, what we know as the traditional, you know, Jewish religion, whatever it looked like in that period of time, was repressed. And the scrolls of the Torah, whatever, if they, you know, how many, I don't know how widespread the scrolls of the Torah were hidden away, maybe by those loyal to Chizkiyahu and to the practice of classical Israelite religion, and it was forgotten. Some people make an, you know, many of the laws were forgotten, and certainly the rhetoric. Some people make an analogy to Soviet Russia, that during the course of three generations, you know, they basically stamped out in many ways knowledge of traditional religion. And if that's the case, you can make this kind of analogy. So one way to say it is they basically discovered, quote unquote, a Sefer Torah, and that's what they were reading. The second approach is to suggest that they discovered not a whole Sefer Torah, but Sefer Devarim, and they were reading the parts that talk about Avodah Zarah and all the terrible things that will happen to the Jewish people, especially in the Tochacha and the reproof. And that's what moved Yoshiyahu and Shafan and all these people so much, because of the terrible calamities that are being promised by God if they do Avodah Zarah and they don't live up to the covenant in Eretz Yisrael. On the other extreme, There are those in the tradition, I'm sorry, before that, there are those in the traditional camp who say, no, they didn't discover a whole Sefer Torah. They discovered part and parcel, a portion of the Torah, specifically, maybe, part of the Sefer Torah that, maybe, the king carried with him, which may not have been the entire Torah entirely. But there are those who also point to an interesting formulation in, again, in the book of Divrei HaYamim, that maybe what they discovered was not just the Sefer Torah, but a very special Sefer Torah. And that's what was Miragesh, that's what gave them such pause and made it so special, because when they go, da 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 da. Vayaged Shafan HaSofer LaMelech. And here, this is in Divrei HaYamim. Let's see what it's, yeah. Da, 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 et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Ubahotzi'am et ha-kesef ha-muvah Beit Adonai, matzah Chilkiyahu ha-kohen et sefer Torat Adonai biyad Moshe. That's a very striking phrase. Sefer Torat Hashem biyad Moshe. And so there are those who claim that one should take this very literally, that this is, they discovered the Sefer Torah that had been actually, written by Moshe Rabbeinu. They discovered the original autograph, so to speak, the original book that had been actually written by Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of Sefer Devarim, that he gave to the Kohanim and the Levim, and that's what was so unique and special about this, and that's what overwhelmed them, that they actually discovered it. Now, on the opposite extreme, of course, you find the early Bible critics, they interpreted this entire story in a totally different way. They interpreted it as not that they discovered a Sefer Torah, but that this was when they wrote the book of Deuteronomy. That is the classical biblical critical of approach here, that this discovery was not really a discovery, but it's kind of hiding the fact that this is the time, this is a kind of masveh, it's a kind of story that's overlapping, that this was the time that they wrote the book of Deuteronomy. Which focuses on destroying Avodah Zarah, and it gives a kind of a biblical justification for everything that Yoshiyahu was doing and trying to encourage the people to do. So that's the more radical, non-traditional reading of this. I also want to mention that there is a an approach that was developed by one of my dear teachers and friends, Rabbi Menachem Liebtag, where he, if I'm not mistaken, he once he wrote about this. I can't find it, but that he actually claims that a kind of middle ground, in the sense that it's not that they wrote it at this time, but the whole thing was a little bit of a hatzaga. The whole thing was a little bit of a created scene in order to encourage and make it as if they discovered the Sefer Torah in order to, hype it up, so to speak. It wasn't that they wrote the Sefer Torah at this time, or they wrote Sefer Dvarim at this time, but that it was a conscious effort to make a big deal. And so they, so to speak, play acted so that the people in general wouldn't know that this was a setup. It's basically a setup that they hid the Sefer Torah, and they discovered it, and that would have a tremendous impact. Look, as we were cleaning the Beit HaMikdash, we discovered the Sefer Torah, and we have the Sefer Torah hidden away, and it's telling us a message. God is trying to convey a message from the depths of the Beit HaMikdash, what we should, how we should behave in this period of time, that Assyria is on the way out. And we can now affirm our independence, religious independence, political independence, our connection to God, and that's what we should be doing now. So that's a different reading of this story. I also, of course, want to point out what many have pointed out. The names here are very striking. You have here a lot of animal names, and especially animals that burrow and furrow for things. So you have a rabbit or a hare, H-A-R-E. Shafan hasofer. A shafan is a, like a shafan is a rabbit. And he says, Sefer Torah Matzati, Vayomer Chilkiyahu Kohen al Shafan, I found this. He comes and he tells the king, they did what they needed to do with the money, and they gave it to those Vayagate Shafan Israel Melch, more Sefer, Natanli Chilkiyahu Kohen. The Sofer gets a Sefer, which of course is a nice irony. He's a Sofer and he gets the Sefer. Chilkiyahu Kohen, Vaikra, Vaikishma Melch, Divrei Sefer Torah, Vaikra et Bgadav. He tears his clothing. Vaitzav Melch et Chio, Vet Achikam ben Shafan, Vet Achbor ben Michayahu. Achbor, of course, sounds very much like an Achbar. Achbar is, of course, a mouse, which also is an animal that, you know, scurries around on the ground and bores into the holes underground. And he tells these people, Vaitzav Melch et Chilkiyahu, a Kohen, V'tachikam ben Shafan, V'tachbor ben Michayahu, V'tshafan ha-sofer, V'tasaya eved ha-melech le'mor, L'chu dirshu et Adonai ba'adi u'ba'ad ha'am, u'ba'ad kol Yehuda. Go and seek out God. Now again, go and, you know, and seek out God for me. And they go about this book. Now again, the type scene here reminds us very much, just as Chizkiyahu, when he heard the terrible news, the Chilul Hashem, the external Chilul Hashem, that the that, you know, Shevna HaSofer and all these guys were blaspheming God and saying in the name of Sancheiriv that, you know, the God of Israel will be destroyed, etc., and Jerusalem will be destroyed, and they tore their clothing. And at that point, Chizkiyahu sends his messengers to Yeshayahu to pray to God. Here too, there is a similar type scene. Vayikishmo haMelech et Divrei haSefer haTorah, Vayikrat Bgadav, he tears his clothing. Vayitzav haMelech et Chilkiyahu Kohen, V'tachikam, V'tachbor, V'tshafan, V'tasayu Eved haMelech, Lemor Lechut Yeshua et Adonai Badi V'Adam, ובעד כל יהודה, על דברי הספר הנמצא הזה, כי גדולה חמת אדוני אשר היא ניצתה בנו, because the anger of the Lord is burning against us, if you listen to the words of the text, of the Torah, על אשר לא שמעו אבותינו על דברי הספר הזה, לעשות ככל הכתוב עלינו, it's going to hold us accountable. Vayelech Chilkiyahu Kohen v'achikam v'achbor v'shafan el chulda ha'neviya. Once again, the name of an animal, a chulda, is of course a, I don't know, some sort of rodent.
A weasel.
Okay. I don't know if it's exactly a weasel. Today we call it a weasel. I don't know that that means that they called it a weasel in the time of Tanakh. A hyrax. Thank you. A hyrax is a type of bunny, correct?
Shafan is a hyrax, not a, only in modern Hebrew, I think it's rabbit.
I'm sorry?
Rabbit.
A rabbit.
That's the only modern Hebrew. Rabbi Slifkin talks all the time about how it's rabbit. Shafan is really a hyrax.
All right, what's the difference?
I think one is that it's native to Eretz Israel. That's a big difference. And then it lives in En Gedi in the rocks.
Okay, but I think the point is the same, that these are all little animals that burrow and hide in the, you know, in the rocks and in the again, it's reflective of the fact that they discovered in the bowels of the Beis HaMikdash, they discovered this Sharan, a rock pasture. Thank you. See, everybody's very up on their shafan. They're very up on their on their zoology. But it doesn't, again, it's the point is that all these people have these interesting names that kind of associate. So they go to Chulda HaNeviya. Of course, the famous question everybody asks is, why didn't they go to Yirmiyahu? We don't know. We don't know why they didn't go to Yirmiyahu. Chazal have a very beautiful answer that they didn't go to Yirmiyahu because Yirmiyahu at this time was out of the country, so to speak. He was out of town. And what was he doing? He was looking for the lost tribes up there in the Aray Menashe and the Aray Naphtali that are mentioned, that he was involved in trying to bring them back. So he had a different mission at this time. It is interesting that he's not mentioned here. Chulda HaNevi is mentioned. Eshet Shalom ben Tikva ben Chaya Shomer HaBegadim. V'hi Yoshevet B'Yerushalayim BaMishneh. Maybe also because she was the closest Nevi'ah. Maybe, Yirmiyahu was, not necessarily hanging out in Jerusalem. He was in Anatot, or he was in other places. And so she is the local Nevi'ah. She's Yoshevet here in Jerusalem. Israel. Imrula tell the man who sent. Ko amar Adonai, hineni mevi ra'al ha'makom hazeh v'al yoshva et kol divrei ha'sefer asher karam melech Yehuda. God will bring about, yes, this is an authentic message of God. It's an authentic Sefer Torah. It's an authentic nevuah. It's a tochacha. Hineni mevi ra'al ha'makom hazeh asher et kol divrei ha'sefer asher karam tachat asher azavuni. And it will not end. This, of course, is very similar. It has the echoes of many. It has the echoes of many prophecies, and especially going back to Yeshayahu, who lived through the destruction of Shomron and used the very same imagery in the very beginning in his inaugural Nevuah when he talked about the fact that there will be a remnant, but that remnant will also suffer. And ostensibly the remnant referred to Judah there because he talked about V'ayach Hason L'Na'oret. Nothing will quench the fire. And then in Perek Vav, where he gave the nevuah of the destruction, probably of the northern tribes, he said, "What until when?" Vayomer Hashem, "Ad asher yimshau arim ein yoshev batim ein adam." Even the remnant, it will also be consumed and on fire. Like the Elah, like the terebinth, the Cha'alon, and like the oak, when the leaves fall, all that's left is the trunk. So again, the image is there's something left, but it will be consumed in fire. And here too, you have this image of a fire, a consuming fire that won't go out. The destruction will be a terrible destruction, an overwhelming destruction, and it'll be a destruction that, and again, the two things, Makom Hazeh, of course, seems to imply Jerusalem and those who live in Jerusalem. It could also refer to the Beit HaMikdash. And there's a hinting here of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Tachat asher azavuni vayikatru limachrim l'man achiseini b'chol maseidem v'nitzach hamatim b'makom hazeh. Again, the emphasis on ha-makom hazeh v'lo tichbeh, and it won't go out. V'el melech yudah shalech etchem lidrosh et Hashem kol tomru elav. Ko amar Hashem Elohei Yisrael hadvarim asher shamata, ya'an rach levavcha v'tikana mipnei Hashem. Just like with Chizkiyahu, except that what we saw with Chizkiyahu is that there, Chizkiyahu was presented in a kind of ambivalent form, that he was happy that it would happen, wouldn't happen in his day, that he was so caught up with the immediate. Here, he's told this, but he's not, we don't see the reaction. You know, that he says this is good. He just, it's just telling us that God said, however, Yan Rach Levavcha Vatikana Mipnei Adonai, B'Shamacha Asher Dibarti L'Makom Hazeh V'Al Yoshvav L'Yot L'Shama V'Leklala Vatikra T'Gadefa, because what you heard and you reacted and you tore your clothing, V'Gam Anochi Shamati Nu Mashem L'Chein Hineni Osifcha L'Avotecha, you will die in your familial grave, V'Ne'esavta El Kvarecha, Kivrotecha b'shalom, you will go in peace. V'lo tir'ena einecha b'chol hara'a asher ani mevi'a l'makom hazeh v'yashivu et ha'melech davar. Now, on the one hand, this is you know, a kind of positive thing, but the fact that he's not going to see it, you know, he's not going to see it could be one of two reasons: either because it's very, very far in the distance, or because he's not going to live that long. So it may be 20 years from now, the destruction, but you're going to die. Yeah, you're going to die in your bed. You're going to, or not, you're going to die and you are going to be buried together with your forefathers. You're not going to be, you know, you're not going to be dragged in the street like a criminal. You're not going to be taken by the horses. All the terrible things that are described, you know, some of the kings, that's not going to happen to you. You're going to go back to your forefathers. You will die in peace. You will not see the destruction of Jerusalem. In your day, Jerusalem will not be under threat from Babel, which is going to be the next Babylonia, which is going to be the next superpower. But at the same time, maybe it's also hinting at the fact that you're not going to live a long time. And in fact, from the very beginning of this chapter, we see that. Ben Shmona Shana Yishayahu Yoshev Malcho U'Shloshim V'Achat Shana Malach B'Yushalayim. That means he died when he was 39. He died very young. And that is, you know, a kind of tragedy which we're going to see unfold in Yirtz Hashem next week. We're going to see the tragedy of the death of Yoshiyahu, which, as you know, we even mourn on Tisha B'Av, Vayikonein Yirmiyahu al Yoshiyahu, which is that little phrase from Direi HaYamim, which we attach to one of the prakim, one of the, you know, we attach it to one of the prakim in Eicha, we attach it to some of the keynote on Tisha B'Av. And so that's what is, you know, that's what's happening here at the end of this parak. So Im Yirtz Hashem, next week, we will go even deeper into Yoshiyahu. We'll be able to see what happens to him. And as I said, we should be able to finish in the next 3 weeks. We should be able to finish what we need to finish. And we'll add a little bit, a summary and stuff like that. Everyone should have a wonderful week. Everyone should have a Shabbat Shalom and all the best. Good evening.
Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Wonderful show.
Thank you. Okay. Bye bye.